The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
It's the Gary Knoll Show, and now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This program is dedicated for people who are of independent mind, who hopefully in that moment of declaring their independence and freedom to look at issues for what they are, not decorated with different subjective criteria of thought, preordaining them to biases, but rather simply coming to an idea of what is true. That's why I'm here each day, 15 hours a week. We just finished a 6-hour overnight of discussing issues important to the people in this audience around the world, and today we continue. No guest today. We will continue with some really interesting guests tomorrow and Friday. In fact, on Friday, in the second hour of our program, you'll be hearing a conversation that I will be having with the second most significant Buddhist in the Tibetan culture outside the Dalai Lama, Rinpoche, the Prime Minister, and considered by many the leading intellect on the subject. It will not be an easy conversation for you to understand as the dialect and the distance on the transmission, but please be patient. But for those who listen carefully, am I reiterating what he says into easily understandable English, you'll get the message and the gist of it. Anyway, we have a lot to share with you today. I intend to take a lot of calls today, starting in about 15 minutes, and deal with commentaries, the one I did not have a chance to get to yesterday, which I think is very important, from Ralph Nader and commondreams.org, for whom the bells toll. And that refers to Bell, California, working class town of some 38,000, 10 miles outside of Los Angeles. I'll also be sharing some insights, time permitting, on the Doomsday Seed Vault in the Arctic. A lot to talk about. But always we begin with health and nutrition. This is from Medline. This is mainstream, a service of the National Library of Medicine and the National Institutes of Health. So we're talking about orthodox medicine, making a statement published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and done at the University of Barcelona. Here's what they're saying. Wine and sunshine in two separate studies show life-enhancing, life-extending benefits. A glass of wine makes all the difference to a woman's health. Let me quote this. Wine first. In a report from Spain, University of Barcelona evaluated the effects of moderate consumptions of wine, that's about 6 ounces of wine, that would be equivalent to about 2 glasses a day, in a group of non-smoking women. Their average age was 38. The study was done like any other controlled trial, with each woman drinking the 2 glasses over a 4-week period, and then a 4-week period where they consumed none, a dry out period. Quote, the data showed that in comparison with the baseline, consumption of red wine increased serum HDL, that's the good cholesterol, which suggests cardioprotective effects, unquote. Similarly, serum concentrations of interleukin-6 and high-sensitivity C-reactive protein, both markers of chronic inflammation, decreased significantly in those who consumed the wine. And then they did a separate study on the effects of sunlight. And this was done by a group of individuals getting about an hour of direct sunlight a day. And this was a British and American team. And it found that there was a substantial reduction in the pro-inflammatory molecules when the vitamin D increased in the body. Now, we know that vitamin D is made when the sun hits the skin. So that means that when you have red grapes or grape juice or red wine, that you're going to have cardioprotective benefits. Now, here's my suggestion. The amount of resveratrol and antioxidants in red grapes, about a quarter of a pound, will exceed what you will get in a glass of wine. What you would get in the amount of a grape juice is about what you would get in a bottle of wine. And what you would get in 2 ounces of grape juice concentrate would be about a gallon of wine. The trouble with the wine is that they frequently use sulfates, which can be very pro-inflammatory in the lungs and any other chemicals. So, or you can take a resveratrol and antioxidant tablet and get the best of all. But at least those people who are relaxing in the sun and having a glass of wine, the assumption is that they're going to be taking it easy, something that we in the United States have a hard time doing. We rush with anxiety to a place to have a glass of wine and then rush home. We've just got to slow down and relax more, but still good studies. Disorders that text addicts suffer from the Times of India. This is a study that was done on Australian teenagers who are texting a lot. Quote, "This study into youth communication habits identified the risks teens face from texting excessively every day. And the symptoms include anxiety, insecurity, depression, low self-esteem, and repetitive thumb syndrome." What the heck is that? According to figures released from this study, text messaging has increased by 89% in the last 2 years. And from the University of Melbourne, their chief technologist took a look and said that this is really messing with teenagers' lives. And you actually have a post-traumatic text disorder and binge texting. Oh, I'm sure they've got drugs to treat these, of course. With this textiety, there's a feeling no one loves me, no one's contacting me, when you have no one texting you. Post-traumatic text disorder is a stress disorder involving physical and mental injuries from texting. Well, okay. My goodness. What would happen if people just actually spoke with one another? A healthy diet reduces Alzheimer's by 40%. This is from Columbia University in New York. And Dr. Gu, one of the researchers involved in the study, said, quote, "Diet is probably the easiest way to modify disease risk." Well, that's good. But this is a theory. And they took a look at 2,100 people over the age of 65 for about 4 years. And then saw how many of them got Alzheimer's. But that's relatively easy to do. They're saying that people should have less red meat and dairy and more fruits, vegetables, nuts, cruciferous vegetables, and dark green leafy vegetables. Again, in a large sense, they're absolutely correct, and I support that. But let's get to the real challenge. In the fall, when exactly, I don't know, so I don't want anyone calling, I intend to do a large-scale study with people with dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, and ALS. For 1 year, these people will be medically evaluated, must have medical records to prove that they have these conditions and are not responding to treatment, and then they will be filmed for the year, and I will give them protocols. And let's see what happens at the end of a year. Because it's a whole lot more challenging but more interesting when you can say we had a group of people who had these conditions on this scale, and today, a year later, these individuals have made these objective improvements, and here's the medical verification of it. That would be revolutionary, and that would be really significant. So I intend to do that. More on that when I finish my current health support group, and we have two more meetings to go on that. The FDA says antibiotics in meat is a serious public health threat. Quote from Mary Claire Jenenick, the Food and Drug Administration is urging meat producers to limit the amount of antibiotics they give animals in response to health concerns about the drugs. The FDA said antibiotics in meat pose, quote, a serious public health threat because the drugs create antibiotic-resistant bacteria that can infect humans who eat it. The agency is recommending that producers use the drugs judiciously, limiting their use unless they are medically necessary. Well, let me tell you about this. First, it's all voluntary. Secondly, it's completely subjective. So any farmer, for any reason, can buy any of these antibiotics without a prescription and give them to their cattle. Why? Not because the animal is sick, but because the animal gains weight faster, and when they sell cattle, they sell it by the pound. Therefore, you don't know how much of an antibiotic residue is left in the animal when you consume the milk or the meat. You also don't realize when you drink milk that in that milk, that glass of milk, could be the milk from 1,000 cows. You also don't know how much pus is in milk. You know, the kind of pus you get when you pop a pimple. Just imagine that you have people popping pimples over your glass of milk. That should give you something to think about the next time you have a glass of milk or a piece of cheese. Because it's in there. Oh, yeah. It's definitely in the milk. They have no way of getting it out. And it's white, so you can't tell that it's there by its color. Just remember that the next time you have that. Now, of course, rice milk doesn't have pus. So nobody's popping pimples into your rice milk, your almond milk, and your oat milk. Sea buckthorn oil may ease dry eye symptoms. Now, this is a difficult thing to have ease the symptoms. So this is good news. The oil that you find rich in omega-3 and 6 fatty acids from sea buckthorn may reduce symptoms of dry eye syndrome. This is according to the University of Turku. Now, you can buy the oil in supplements and for 3 months use it, and it should improve the symptoms of contact lens wearers. It's according to the Journal of Nutrition. It's a dry eye syndrome, and it's a condition where the eyes do not make enough tears or the tears evaporate too quickly, and this produces dry eyes and increases the risk of inflammation. And according to this Finnish study, the prevalence of dry eye came up 30% in people aged 50 years and older. Quote, the results of this study suggest that sea buckthorn oil consumption can attenuate the increase in tear film osmolarity occurring during the cold season. So, new information from the scientific literature, and that's good, and this is from the Journal of Nutrition. You'd never know by the articles I have to read. This is the title of this article is Oral Sea Buckthorn Oil Attenuates Tear Film Osmolarity and Symptoms in Individuals with Dry Eyes. Dry, yeah, dry reading, yes, but very important if you have that condition. And finally, Playing Monopoly with Our Health, posted by NUUSA. The American Dietetic Association wants to create a monopoly on state nutritional licensure. This organization, which lists among its corporate sponsors soft drink giant Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola, cereal manufacturers General Mills and Kellogg's, candy makers Mars and Unilever, the multinational corporations that own many of the world's consumer product brands and foods and beverages, already has a stranglehold on who can dispense nutritional counseling at the state level. The latest battle is in Michigan, and we have many listeners right now and watchers. By the way, you can watch today's show by going to progressiveradionetwork.com or GaryNall.com. So far, the Michigan Board of Dietetic and Nutrition has voted to accept the Commission on Dietetic Registration as the sole certifying agency. The CDR is the ADA's accrediting arm. We recently sent Michigan officials a letter asking them to recognize more than one certifying organization. We're requesting at a minimum the acceptance of reputable nutritional-based credentialing agencies like the Certification Board of the Nutrition Specialist or the American Clinical Board of Nutrition. Well, they're fighting to get more than just a registered dietitian recognized to be able to help people who have nutrition-related problems. We fought that battle in New York, and we lost. We fought that battle in New Jersey. We won it for 4 years, then we lost. So now, unfortunately, people have to see, more often than not, dietitians who are grossly unprepared for the realities of the world we live in. And being a registered dietitian and having the certification, but also being a PhD in human nutrition and a professor in the same field, those didn't matter. As long as I had my dietetics background, that's what mattered. But that is the least qualifying standard for helping someone. So just remember, the next time you're finding someone to help you in relationship to the diseases that are impacted by good nutrition and lifestyle, does your dietitian have a background in body-mind medicine? Are they aware and have studies to support the relationship of exercise physiology and health? Do they have a background in the subject of aging? And more often than not, the answer is absolutely no. Then why see such a person? Resveratrol neutralizes toxic Alzheimer's peptides. This is very good. One last thing here. From the Journal of Biological Chemistry, Professor Peter Tizer and associates at the Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, report their findings on an ability of resveratrol, a compound that occurs in red wine, also in grape juice and red grapes, to neutralize improperly folded isoforms of amyloid beta-1-42, a peptide linked to Alzheimer's. In lay language, it means that the more resveratrol that you take, the less of this amyloid plaque is going to build up, which means that you can have a much healthier life. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. To this program. I'm Gary Nall, going to the phones in about 8 minutes. Two short commentaries. Seamus Cook from Global Research, Ralph Nader, For Whom the Bell Tolls from Common Dreams. Let us begin this. They're both short, but meaningful. Bell, California, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, is a working-class town of about 38,000 people, 10 miles outside of Los Angeles. It is a unique place. Its local government has proven to be citizen-proof, media-proof, city council-proof, and even leak-proof from inside its self-enriched top officialdom. Get this. City Bell manager Robert Rizzo resigned a month ago after a Los Angeles Times expose revealed that he was being paid $800,000 a year plus 28 weeks of vacation and sick time worth $386,000. He was also expected to make $600,000 a year in guaranteed pension payouts, and he borrowed $160,000 from the city. So Mr. Rizzo had clever political protection. The police chief was getting $458,000 a year, and members of the city council on this small city were making, for just a very little bit of part-time work, $100,000 each year for each city council member. Even the assistant to Mr. Rizzo was given $376,280 base salary a year, with a total compensation package much higher. Now, here's the problem. What is the average annual income of the 38,000 people living in this working-class town? $25,000. Yeah, $25,000. More than a quarter of its population lives below the poverty line. Expressions of shock and dismay erupted from the expected state legislators, other city officials of much larger cities, and the president of the League of California Cities, Ron Lowe. He said, quote, "The reported abuses are an embarrassment to the thousands of hardworking men and women in city government," and offered the League's assistance to the Los Angeles County District Attorney and the California State Attorney General in their investigations. The League should start by explaining to the two prosecutors why it did not know about the staggering pay scale of its member towns, especially since there is a State Open Meetings and Public Records Act for ready utilization. Mayor Bell, well, he said, "But I deserve this money because our streets are cleaner and we have lovely parks and even some good lighting." Let's pause momentarily to observe the variety and depth of abdication by the government and civic culture in beleaguered Bell. The city has fallen behind on its bond payments and acknowledged it overcharged its residents' property taxes by $3 million to pay for those exorbitant pensions. At least a dozen employees in City Hall had to know of these excesses and chose not to talk or leak the news. Over all the years, the nearby newspapers, television, radio stations did nothing to expose this. The city council knew and was compromised by its own huge payments. Still, political gossip is supposed to be irresistible. None of the citizens, including the usual town gadflies or skeptics, bothered to find out anything. All that was needed to bring this to light was one or two people blowing the whistle. After all, this information is not opinion, it's arithmetic simple. The greater Los Angeles area is the very definition of sprawl, a lack of community that promotes more citizen slackers. It is inconceivable that such outrageously bold and self-enriching formal compensation could escape the notice of citizens of a New England town, even one without a town meeting type of government. Ask them in Lowell, Massachusetts, Torrington, Connecticut, Newport, Rhode Island, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, Burlington, Vermont, and Bangor, Maine. I'll bet their reply would be, "Are you kidding? That wouldn't happen here." Californians' largest also resides in Vernon, California. How many people live in Vernon? Now, boy, listen to the math here. This is staggering. 91 people. Under 100 people live in Vernon, California. It takes up about 5.1 square miles of territory. That's a very small area. That means you could drive through in about 3 minutes. And it's now been revealed by the Los Angeles Times, who reporters found a new exciting town-by-town beat, that the city administrator, Eric French, was paid $1.6 million in total compensation last year. Also, Mr. French, who calls himself an experienced financial attorney, received $1.2 million this year. Granted, Vernon's businesses have a lot of workers, and the town owns its electric utility, but getting paid four times the salary of the President of the United States, who has considerably greater supervisory responsibility, seems to be overreaching. Last year, the Vernon City Administrator, Donald O'Callaghan, was paid $785,000, but that included being the director of the municipally owned utility. Still together, they were just one full-time job, He also had help. The city attorney, Jeffrey Harrison, earned $800,000 last year, down from $1.4 million the year before, while the city treasurer, well, poor him, he only made $570,000 last year. The former city administrator made $600,000 back in 2005, and he draws $500,000 a year pension. All this information about salaries and benefits is public information, but no one in the public was interested enough to find out why nobody was mining the store. The saving grace in Bell is that once they found out, some folks were outraged, rushed in protest to the crowded city council meeting, and around town handed out 10,000 leaflets to engage more residents. This local movement calls itself Basta Bell, Bell Association to Stop the Abuse, which means enough. They strive to arouse the citizenry about where their tax dollars are going and recall the council members, if necessary, to clean house. They've had enough, finally, at last. And that's from Ralph Nader. Now, my thoughts on this? Why don't we simply start cleaning house everywhere? Demand that all abuses at all levels of government, all excesses in all government, city, state, and local, all unnecessary bureaucracies, unnecessary paperwork, duplications, redundancies be eliminated. How much would that save? That would shrink state and federal and local governments by 50%. That means we would reduce the budget by almost $1 trillion a year and would be able to reduce our taxes. Seems like too much to ask? Not at all. If you listen to recent speeches the president has given about the economy and the Iraq war, you'd think that the two biggest social issues facing working Americans are improving, but facts are stubborn things. Take, for example, the numbers of jobs lost in the last 2 months, 222,000 in June and 131,000 in July. Instead of taking the drastic measures needed to stop the continuing hemorrhaging, the president had this to say on August 5th, quote, "Even though it's going to take years to repair all the damage caused by this recession, I'm absolutely convinced that this nation is finally headed in the right direction. Our economy is growing again. We are adding jobs again. America's moving forward again," unquote. Since Obama has access to all the job numbers I just mentioned, he must assume that, boy, he knows better than we do, or he is delusional or lying. We also cannot attribute this comment to one-time slip of the tongue, because Obama has essentially made the same speech multiple times while promoting Democratic candidates nationwide. Contrary to his recent statements, Obama has not improved the economy. He has overseen a catastrophic destruction of jobs on a state-by-state basis, in part due to the state budget crisis and the pathetic lack of response on the national level. Obama's first stimulus was underfunded and misdirected. So much money went to corporate America. And while Obama's recent stimulus, only $26 billion, is simply farcical. The state budget crisis are not over. Many states are projecting long-term deficits in the billions of dollars that, if left untouched, will contribute further to the massive unemployment that continues to drive down wages for unemployed workers. In fact, the U.S. economy is in such sad shape, it is recently announced that call center workers in India now make a similar wage to their U.S. counterparts, while auto workers are being pressured to make 50% wage concessions. When it comes to the Iraq war, Obama is equally off-kilter. He recently announced the end of, quote, combat operations in Iraq, which were meant to be interpreted as mission accomplished. Meanwhile, we're told 50,000 troops stay in Iraq, along with over 100,000 private mercenary contractors, all of which we're paying, capable of conducting counterterrorism operations, meaning nothing has changed. But the war has been advertised as one giant counterterrorism operation for years, meaning that nothing has changed with the war. Obama's Bush-style war propaganda will do nothing to impress the Iraqis, who still live in a war-torn hellhole with over 1 million dead, millions of refugees having fled the country, while the remaining inhabitants are left to rot in a destroyed economy, lacking widespread access to jobs, water, sanitation, and electricity. And of course, the troops leaving Iraq will simply be shifted to Afghanistan, while the troops staying in Iraq will be there to prop up a government that functions in limbo, is completely, totally corrupt at every level, lacking all authority outside the violence it learns from the remaining U.S. trainers and advisors. The U.S. injected Iraq with corruption on a grand scale. They stamped the seal of torture on Abu Ghraib, a worthy successor to the same prison under Saddam Hussein's vile rule. They created a country that, for all of its brutality and corruption, is now no better. In short, the U.S. invasion of Iraq has made things worse for Iraqis, and Obama is selling the war as a victory as he recklessly dashes over to Afghanistan to repeat the atrocity. The hundreds of billions of dollars that Obama will use to wage war in Iraq and Afghanistan should be going to create jobs in the United States. Public works could be financed by the government as they were doing the last depression that directly created jobs. The war money could also go to the states suffering massive cutbacks in social services and public education. If working Americans sit idle, nothing will change, since power concedes nothing without a demand. On October 2nd, workers will directly confront the Obama administration over the above policies. Hopefully, these nationwide demonstrations, organized by the One Nation Coalition, will begin a movement that challenges the corporate agenda we've suffered under for decades. Some of the coalition will attempt to channel the momentum to elect Democrats in November. I'm opposed to that. I'm opposed to electing Democrats or Republicans. I want to see independents elected. Seamus Cook. I'm Gary Knoll. Now for your turn. Our call line is open, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We'll be taking some calls. I'll be joined in a second by our program director. So please stay with us. Welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to your calls in just a moment. Let me just quickly mention that the new and improved greens and grains, raw, you bet, all natural, absolutely 28 vegetables with phytonutrients, organic flaxseed at high amounts, over 8 billion different probiotics to help your intestines, sprouted grains, and a multitude of different sea vegetables I'm sure that you've never heard and have never used. All that is in the new greens and grains, and of course it is Circle K kosher, as all of my special products are. And for those of you who care about your health, who want to flood your body with the benefit of concentrated chlorophyll, concentrated phytonutrients, who may not be eating all the organic fruits and vegetables that you should, and think of the people today who have conditions that have not responded. Why not try lifestyle modification? Why not assist your body in regulating pH balance and stimulate the body's natural cleansing and detoxifying process? Protect your body. Help your DNA. Enzymes, they're phenomenal. You find enzymes in the grains and the sprouted green vegetables and cruciferous vegetables. And what do those enzymes do? Look at the scientific literature. They improve digestion, activate cell activity in all areas of the body, contribute greatly to your cell and tissue growth. They reduce stress and depletion of the body's potential store of enzymes. And they also act as scavengers and stimulate scavengers. So what did I do? Well, I decided to put the products that I consider unique. And what is unique about these products is this is the only product you will find. There's no duplication. So when I made the new and improved Greens and Grades, first, has the most wonderful flavor. I made it for people who don't like the taste of green. I made it for children and finicky people's taste. So everybody loves to taste this. The number one ingredient, organic flaxseed powder. A lot of it. Because you want those essential fatty acids. Then oat grass, the whole leaf, which I juice, alfalfa leaf, which I juice, pumpkin seeds, green kamut juice, one of the oldest and most important the grasses in history, sprouted quinoa, sprouted kamut, sprouted amaranth, sprouted spelt, all of the fructooleosaccharides, yucca, and fennel, and ginseng, and chia seeds, and bromelain, so important, so important. Look under the literature on bromelain and anti-inflammatory. And then a list of five different sea vegetables you've never heard of, you've never used, you've never seen. Yeah, I'm talking about sea vegetables such as laminaria, japonica, and echolinia. But I created the blend knowing how important it was to get the minerals from the ocean into our body. And then the probiotics, five different types of probiotics from a wide variety of bifidus and lactobacillus acidophiluses, dairy-free, 8 billion. Natural flavor and is from pineapple and cherry. So it's called the New and Improved Greens and Grains. There are more servings, 60 servings in it. And there's nothing else out there like it. I take my scoop of greens and grains. I take a couple of scoops of greens and grains, a couple of scoops of green stuff, put them together. They're both new. And you can call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And pick them up. In our studio, we have, and I've got people up here online. Let me just see who I have here. So I can take a couple calls and then go to, and then I'll go over here to. Let me just see. Got to get it to where. No, this isn't working for me. Let's go to Johnson from New York. Hi, Johnson.
Hello. Yes.
Yeah. Hi. You're on the air.
Yes. I wanted to know how could one reverse balding.
Okay, very simple. What I want you to do is to go to GaryNall.com, look under the Heron Skin Study. There you will find the actual protocols, which are rather substantial. I think they're about 12 pages long. You will also see the results of the actual hair and skin study that was done. This is the third hair and skin study. One contained had about 1,300 people. This one has less, but it's very meticulous because we took photographs every month. We measured hair. You couldn't dye the hair. You had to have thinning, balding, or graying to get into the study. And we also measured skin, the quality of skin, the age spots, the tightness, the wrinkles under the neck and on the hands and the forehead and around the eyes and on the knees. And at the end of 12 months, we then did an analysis, and then we had it independently analyzed, and a study came from it, a very important study. In fact, it was accepted by the World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine, the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine's a director to present. And I haven't had a chance to present it. They keep having these invitations, and I have to keep rejecting because they're competing with my travel and film schedule, but I'll get around to doing it. But the whole study is there, and the whole protocol is there for you. Okay, Johnson? All the best to you. And let us say hello to Rochelle from the Bronx. Hi, Rochelle.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, I was just calling to see if you received the article that I sent you about the trees on Pelham Parkway.
Sorry, I have not received it, so if you send it, I will be happy to review it. It's about saving trees, and I support the saving of trees. I support I supported saving the trees along with Sharon Woolham, who is also from West Virginia, who's been a friend for a long time, who led the efforts to try to get New York University not to tear down the trees and make a mess of Washington Square Park, which they did in the surrounding area. So we have a whole policy of supporting protecting the trees and actually expanding the trees. My effort is to get 15 million trees in every community, every state in the United States. That would do a great deal to help our efforts. So we're working on that as we speak. All the best to you. Thanks. In studio, hi.
Good afternoon, Gary. I'd like to start off with an email that we got from a listener. It's kind of an explosive email, so we'll go right into it. She says, Dennis Miller is a comedian who has a daily radio show. Although he is not Jewish, he recently had the following to say about the Middle East situation. A brief overview of the situation is always valuable, so as a service to all Americans who still don't get it, I now offer you the story of the Middle East in just a few paragraphs, which is all you really need. So here it goes. The Palestinians want their own country. There is just one thing about that. There are no Palestinians. It's a made-up word. Israel was called Palestine for 2,000 years. Like Wiccan, Palestinian sounds ancient, but it is really a modern invention. Before the Israelis won the land in the 1967 war, Gaza was owned by Egypt, the West Bank was owned by Jordan, and there were no Palestinians. As soon as the Jews took over and started growing oranges as big as basketballs, what do you know? Say hello to the Palestinians weeping for their deep bond with their lost land and nation. So for the sake of honesty, let's not use the word Palestinian anymore to describe these delightful folks who dance for joy at our deaths until someone points out they're being taped. Instead, let's call them what they are, other Arabs who can't accomplish anything in life and would rather wrap themselves in the seductive melodrama of eternal struggle and death. I know that's a bit unwieldy to expect to see on CNN. How about this, then? Adjunct Jew haters. Okay, so they're Jew haters who want their own country. Oops, just one more thing. No, they don't. They could have had their own country any time in the last 30 years, especially several years ago at Camp David. But if you have your own country, you have to have traffic lights and garbage trucks and chambers of commerce and worse. You have to figure out some way to make a living. That's no fun. No, all they want what all the other Jew haters in the region want, Israel. They also want a big pile of dead people. Of course, that's where the real fun is, but mostly they want Israel. Why? For one thing, they're trying to destroy Israel, or the Zionist entity, as their textbooks call it, for the last 50 years, has allowed the rulers of Arab countries to divert their attention of their own people away from the fact that they're the blue ribbon, most illiterate, poorest, and tribally backward on God's earth. And if you've ever been around God's earth, you know that's really saying something. It makes me roll my eyes every time one of our pundits waxes poetic about the great history and culture of the Muslim Mideast. Unless I'm missing something, the Arabs haven't given anything to the world since algebra. And by the way, thanks a lot for that one. Chew this around and spit it out.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. You don't have to read anymore. And this is Dennis Miller, the clown that shows up on Bill O'Reilly?
I believe it's that comedian.
Okay, all right. This is the most misinformed, unintelligent statement or series of statements that Miller could make and proves his complete ignorance and blindness to historical facts. There has been vast amounts of scholarly research from Muslims and non-Muslims all over the world. He talks about them being illiterate and ignorant and of no value and providing nothing historical.
Yeah, well, lacking cultural history.
Okay, how about the Golden Age of Islam during the Middle Ages when Europe existed as a thoroughly unscientific, barbaric, superstitious, non-hygienic society that would eventually lead to the fanaticism and evils of the Crusades? In fact, if you were to take a course in Arab history in any secular university in the world today, clearly he is not, nor Bill O'Reilly, you would learn that the center of the most brilliant academia and scientific inquiry in the world at the time revolved around Baghdad and its world-renowned institute. known as the Beit al-Hikmah, or the House of Wisdom. And while the Greek works of Pythagoras and Plato and Aristotle and Hippocrates and Euclid and Galen fell into obscurity in Europe, the Muslims preserved these in the Middle East, which eventually made their return to Europe in new Latin translations to allow the world to have something that otherwise it would not have had. Keep in mind, in fact, even the works of the great Indian scientists of the time, scientists such as Charaka and Aryabhatta and Brahmagupta, were studied and preserved, which gave rise to the mathematical concept of zero. Now, Miller may not be aware of it, but even they influenced the art of papermaking, and it was the Arabs that learned from the Chinese well before paper appeared in Europe. They were the first hospitals, a real sewage system at the time when Europeans were unaware whether they were making a mess in their pants or outside the front doors. Astronomy, some of the most advanced rules of mathematics, chemistry, the arts of surveying and navigation, the mapping of the body's entire circulation system and other insights in anatomy, and the functions of the human body and many other sciences and inventions that today are common in our vocabulary but clearly not in Miller's vocabulary. And first, who is Dennis Miller? Is he a scholar? No. Political scientist, international relations expert? No. Economist, world historian? No. He is a comedian, someone who earned his money and renown solely from comedy. I think he wrote for Saturday Night Live, and he did a Monday Night Football gig, and he's in the same league as Glenn Beck, a comedian who takes himself seriously. Entertainers lacking in sensibility and displaying strong sociopathic tendency. What you just read is sociopathic. It's delusional. And unfortunately, he is delusional in the proportions about the background and interpretation of current events. Miller is a self-proclaimed conservative libertarian of the Tea Party genre, who has supported Gingrich in the 90s and Bush and McCain more recently. We won't hold that against him. But when he says that Palestine didn't exist for the Palestinians and it was just a new concept and they could have had their peace in the last few years, my God, is this guy completely insane? First, a little history lesson. It's an ancient name. Palestine. Palestine in Greek, and Palestinia in Latin, Palestine. Originally, it did not just denote the areas under which the name Israel, but marked a much larger region of the Mediterranean Sea to the Jordan River and the adjoining lands. And contrary to this fanatic's lack of research into his Muslim-hating rant towards Palestinians and Arabs and all Muslims in general, Palestine relates specifically to the people known as the Philistines, mentioned in the ancient Egyptian texts such as the Medinet Habu during the time of the Pharaoh Ramses III, the people who lived in the area now known as the Gaza, before there were ever Hebrews or Jews in the region. This is reflected in the modern Arabic word for Palestine that is still Philistina, Philistina. The Assyrian emperor Sargon II and the ancient Greek historian Herodotus in 500 BC both mention the land of Palestine in their writings. In the Jewish book of Exodus, the land is also referred to as Philistina. And through the period of Roman and Byzantine and British domination, the region was still known as Palestine, up until Western nations gave the land to diasporic Jews, who subsequently renamed the land Israel. Now, the advent of constant war and fighting by foreign invading tribes known as the Hebrews into the ancient land known as Palestine over the course of many, many decades was nothing more than a conquest and rulership over people whose roots were in the Near East for centuries. And only after the Jewish people defeated the people living there was there a rewriting of this history that he is using. Let's be very clear. Miller's denunciation of the backwardness of the Palestinians and Arabs prior to founding the modern state of Israel comes from bias and racism. His statements are offendingly racist. The land of Palestine before the return of the Jews to the Near East in the modern Zionist era was a thoroughly colonized region of the British and the French and the Ottomans of Turkey for centuries. And as with all colonies of Western nations, the strategy has always been to keep the people backward, preventing them from finding their national and religious and ethnic identity in order to wield control over them. And so we find this during colonial India and the Belgian Congo and South Africa and South America and the Spanish and many other examples. At no time in modern history were the Jews a colonized people in their homeland. And only if we look back at the ancient periods of domination by the Babylonians and the Assyrians and the Romans and later the Caliphate. And today, modern-day Palestine is a little more than a colony of Israel, and following the same strategies as early European colonial powers, it is not in the process of creating peace in a joint environment. Shame on Dennis Miller for being so susceptible to have an Islamophobe indoctrination. It's embarrassing. Next issue.
All right, Gary. This is a much better email from a woman named Clara, and it's talking about how Google plans to take over the web, or at least their new deal that they're planning with Verizon that might put an end to net neutrality. Clara wants to know what you think and if it's true.
It is true. I will be doing an original investigative report on it on tomorrow's program. It is absolutely true. There is an effort underway as we speak and has been for some time for controlling the internet and therefore being able to select who gets on and who doesn't get on and what it will cost them to stay on. So there's a massive effort underway now. And the pushback will come when people are aware that there is an effort and what the dimensions of that effort are. And I intend to address this on tomorrow's show.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Well, then how about this issue that was front page on the New York Times a couple of days ago? It's talking about inaction in hospitals to let tubes that are look-alike but carry very different substances in them, whether or not it's food or oxygen, to be mixed up and have caused deaths and sometimes stillbirths with pregnant women.
Well, hold on a second. If people have no idea how common that is, where a feeding tube should go through generally it can go through the nose and down the throat, but you cannot put heavy particulate matter like a food in an intravenous drip. It will cause massive chemical reactions in the body. It could kill a person, and they do this commonly. These are covered up. I intend to do, not this week, but when I return from India, I intend to do a full 1 week to tie in with the finish and premiering of Death by Medicine, the report on Death by Medicine, and that is included in that.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Mm-hmm.
I want to say goodbye to our WMYE audience. Thank you very much for tuning in today. We'll be continuing for the next about 8 minutes over the internet, and you can go to GaryNall.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to listen in to us. Please continue, and I will continue to take calls. I don't have any calls up right now, but I'll be happy to take calls at 888-874-4888.
All right, Gary. This story is about this mega mansion in Georgia. It's huge. And
the one that was auctioned off?
Yep, exactly. The one that was auctioned off. And even though it was once rated quite higher, it only went for about $7 million. And it was sold to media mogul, you probably know him, Tyler Perry. and he just intends to bulldoze the land and build a whole new house.
That's all ego. First, it shows the excess of a mindset during the 70s and 80s. Who am I? Well, you might be just a nice human being. Someone who's a good father, a good friend, a good member of society. And that's the way we should be living, in a cooperative manner with the people around us. But what if that's not enough? What if you feel inferior? And what if the only way that you'll be able to get people to pay attention to you is by excess? Well, then what can you make that's so in excess of anyone else that you, in effect, are creating a legacy for yourself by what you do? How about building a big house? After all, the people in the 19th century did that. The Rockefellers, the Goulds, the Mellons, the Swearingens, the Hills, the Fisks, the Baltimores, the large mansions, the mega estates that we go visit today, if they're open to the public. So people begin to build themselves these mansions. But they do so based upon checkbook aestheticism. There's little attention paid to the formality of gardens. One of the reasons I love going to England and France and Spain is because the beauty of the gardens, to walk in their parks and gardens, is just to be transformed into a cacophony of sights and smells, a palette of all the different colors you'll see, and the arrangements are magnificent. The gardens you see in the United States are throw-togethers, last-minute afterthoughts. It's all in the dominance of the mansion. Build it big. And these are over-the-top mansions, especially when you consider how few people are going to live in them. So what then is the purpose of the mansion? So you can brag. You have the biggest house, the most square footage. You have the most expensive furniture. And it never matches. It's just ostentatious. Looks like Donald Trump's designed it. Everything is without taste, without class. And then one day, you find that, gee whiz, now that you built it, you have to maintain it, pay taxes on it, and pay insurance on it. And that can run anywhere from $1 to $5 million a year. That's assuming that you've owned it. What if you're a person that paid for it by your stock holdings? Now the stock value went down. Now you're in trouble. So part of the energy, excitement, is in building it, and anxiety. And the other part is, can you keep it? In today's world, very few people can actually keep through their lifetimes what they build. So the anxiety of possessing it. And then one day you have to give it up. And then someone else comes along and buys it, but lets people know, I intend to tear it down. But why would you spend that much money on something that you have to tear down? Because it shows, I'm rich and powerful too. It's all about ego from insecure people. And we have millions of them today in our society. Think of the lesson that teaches to the young people. You're only as valuable. You're only as wanted. You're only as appreciated as your excesses. Wrong messages. We're running out of time here. I want to give time for our next show, Dr. Stephen Barnett, who's going to be here with the Paradise Parking Lot, a very popular show, to come on and have time to set up. And so we will hold our thoughts until tomorrow, and I look forward to sharing with everyone tomorrow. I'm also going to be interviewing today, and I'm interviewing tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock for personal assistance, since I'm without a personal assistant now. And it's a full-time job, 9 to 5, pays well. But you got to be smart. You got to be very good with people. And if you're interested, call Kara. Kara, give me your number.
You can give me a call at 646-926-5428. Again, that is 646-926-5428.
And I'll get to some of my other commentaries that I didn't have a chance to get to today on tomorrow's show. Have a nice day, everyone.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.